What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 5 of the Adjacent Hex podcast. My name is Zach, and joining me again, as with each and every month, is my buddy Doug. How's it going, dude? You excited for fall yet?
Fall is my favorite season. I'm super excited for fall. And Halloween is my favorite holiday, so I'm super excited for Halloween.
Do you have a costume picked out yet?
I do. I'm going as Dean from Supernatural. I got a first blade. If anybody watches the show, they'll know what I'm talking about. A first blade off the internet, and we got a henna kit, so I'm going to do the Mark of Cain, and I got a fake tattoo that I'm going to put on my shoulder or chest. Even though no one will see it, I'll know it's there. And after that, it's just clothes that I own.
Nice. Oh, that's super convenient. I'm sticking with the board game theme. I am going as Setback from the Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I just ordered the... I'm going rash guard style again. Like I did an Aquabat cosplay last year, mm-hmm. and it was super duper comfortable. So I decided that anytime I need to do a spandex costume from now on, I'm just sewing a couple of rash guards together.
That is something I don't have a problem with because I never do spandex costumes.
I guess, you know, you hang out with a few of our friends long enough and
it rubs off. That'll be cool. Are you going to, like, bring dice around and make decisions all night based on terrible rolls, or?
Oh, absolutely. And they're going to be loaded dice, too.
There you go.
So the loaded so I fail. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I noticed about October and you know, just fall in general, it's Kickstarter season, man.
Oh, I've backed 2 games this month.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cool stuff out on Kickstarter right now. I've been watching Spirit Island. Although it's not something I would normally be interested in, the ratings and the company and stuff that are involved have really piqued my interest. So good luck to Greater Than Games for that. But also, Kickstarters seem to be coming in. Like, I think I've received 4 packages from Kickstarter in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't back that much, though.
Yeah, I kind of went insane early in the year.
It happens every now and then.
It really does. Sometimes you just get a batch of really exciting products out of Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I recently picked up Don't Turn Your Back, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Between Two Cities is coming in from Stonemaier mm-hmm. Games Company.
Yeah, that's one I kind of wish I'd jumped on. I actually learned about it like 2 days after the campaign ended.
Oh, you should have just emailed them. That's what I did.
That's all right. I have Euphoria and Viticulture and the Tuscany expansion, and I'm sure the game will be in the stores.
And apparently they just found a stock of Viticulture and Tuscany hanging around the warehouse, so those are going to be available again.
Oh, that they had miscounted or didn't know was there? Or?
Yep,
oh,
exactly. So I might jump on that at some point.
Yeah, both great games.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, Stonemaier just does a great job. And I also got Tiny Epic Galaxies in. Which was...
Yeah, that is getting crazy reviews.
Oh my gosh, the buzz is phenomenal on that game. And interestingly enough, we played a game of it at the last board game day, and the first time that I played, I was not happy with it.
Oh, really?
And that's really because I fell behind on turn 1 because I missed the importance of a mechanic.
It's not cooperative then.
It is not cooperative.
Okay.
And I guess I maybe didn't realize that as quickly as I would have liked. I should have put 2 and 2 together because Tiny Epic Defenders was the first full co-op game from Gamelan Games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I should have realized that they would have gone back to their roots a little bit with Galaxies. But what I didn't realize is the importance of either following or play or having a plan for your turn. So when it got to my turn, I was kind of just floundering. I was guessing. And that ended up not working as strongly in my favor as I would have hoped. And I kind of got rollicked because of it.
Well, it's a first game. First games are usually learning games.
Exactly. And I was playing with some very seasoned veterans of the worker placement genre. and as a friend of ours pointed out, you can't judge a game solely on its first play. As a matter of fact, I've played the solo variant, and I had a lot of fun with that. And I also played again with another group of people, a little bit less cutthroat, and it the mechanics of the game really come together. It feels like you're exploring. I do give this game a thumbs up.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it, and I didn't back it. I love that company, even though I can't remember what their name is.
Gamelan Games.
Dungeon Hero, Epic Kingdoms, Epic Defenders. But sci-fi isn't really my favorite theme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why I didn't back it, just because I didn't think a sci-fi game would be one that I played often. But I'm really interested in trying it now that I've seen how great the reviews are.
It's really interesting that you would bring up sci-fi, because it actually, surprisingly enough, leads us into our main topic a little bit. And I noticed recently that, because I've been sitting down, it's fall, I've been playing horror games and Halloween-style games, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. When people talk about horror and Halloween-style games, the sci-fi version of those gets overlooked a lot. We played Level 7 Invasion.
Mm, Omega Protocol?
I don't recall that.
I haven't played it.
Okay. Level 7 Invasion is similar in a way to Alien Frontier or Pandemic or something like that, where you're the surviving members of the United Nations and you are defending against impending alien invasions and repeated alien attacks, and there's all kinds of events and stuff that happen. The team really has to work together.
So that's a co-op game.
It is a co-op. It's a co-op, and it's almost a worker placement game.
Okay.
Which I've never seen anything like that. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made, and mm-hmm. a lot of decisions that have to be made very quickly and without a lot of information. So the depth of strategy is surprisingly deep. So I was really enjoying that game. But it made me think, you know, what else when we talk about, the horror genre, what science fiction-y stuff gets overlooked? And fortunately, it's not that much. I mean, you have games like that, but...
Yeah, I feel like the majority of sci-fi board games I'm aware of aren't really horror-heavy. I mean, they might be combat, like Marines in a space station and, you know, alien monsters coming at them, but I consider them more like combat games.
Mm-hmm.
Than a horror game.
Yeah.
And more a sci-fi game than a horror game. Horror, to me, is more about survival.
Right. And I think that's where Level 7 Invasion really shines, is it is a survival game. It's the survival of the human race. So I think that's why I consider it a horror game.
That's cool. Who owns that?
That one is Privateer Press, actually.
Privateer Press.
And it actually comes with, you know, a whole bunch of the trademark Privateer Press miniatures, and it looks really, really good.
Who in our group owns that? Because I want to give it a try.
I think it was Josh. I'm not 100% okay. Sure.
I'll ask Josh about it.
Yeah.
He owns a lot of games.
He does have a lot of games. He's one of our connections in terms of borrowing games and stuff, too. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I really consider that a horror game, in the same vein as we would consider War of the Worlds a horror story.
All right.
Right?
That's fair. Yeah.
It's a very similar concept.
Or Alien.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Alien's more about, I mean, you could have taken that same story and put it in a cave or put it in a isolated building or something. It just happens to be in a space station, but it's really about that creature and the survival.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Level 7 Invasion is a semi-co-op. You can mm-hmm. sort of stab each other in the back a little bit, too.
Oh, you can? Like a monster's coming to eat you, you kick your other guy next to you at the monster so you can live?
Yeah, I mean, the way we were playing, honestly, we were just like, all right, this game is hard. Let's just take out that backstabbing component, and we're just going to play a straight co-op version.
Okay. And so you modified it a little bit? You just...
Yeah, we just took out a couple of little mechanics that just make things more difficult.
I mean, you can do that. You can do that with, like, Dead of Winter.
Mm-hmm.
You can take out the traitor.
Absolutely.
Play it straight co-op. You can do that with... I've heard of people doing that with Shadows Over Camelot.
Yes. Yeah,
I've
absolutely.
Heard people doing that with Shadows Over Camelot. Well, they'll take out the traitor.
Yeah, definitely.
Too.
And I think, I mean, you can't really do it on Betrayal of the House on the Hill, which is another
good... It kind of ruined the game.
Yeah. I mean, but that's another really, really good horror game that I haven't played lately. In fact, it's been a number of years since I played that game. I don't even remember it all that well.
Yeah, I haven't played it since National Board Game Day.
Right.
I think we talked about that on the first episode.
Yeah. So you've definitely played it before, or more recently than I have.
Yeah.
But my friend, one of our regulars at the store really wants to play it, and he just hasn't been available lately, so.
Gotta get on that.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the time of year, too.
Absolutely, and that's really what we wanted to talk about today, I think, is just this time of year, it's time to bust out all those horror games. Have you managed to get on any lately?
I have played, I think since the last episode, 9 different games, and 8 of them have been new.
New, like, releases or new to you?
New to me.
Okay.
Actually, a couple of them are new as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just go through them real quick. I played Seasons for the first time.
Okay.
My first game, card drafting, big chunky dice. Really enjoyed it. Played it with the starter decks and with the drafting mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Drafting is definitely the way to go.
Okay, good to know. Oh, that's
been around a while. I hear that the it's very similar to the Avengers X-Men dice game. That sort of thing. Lots of fun. Teach it really quickly. Play it really quickly. Very luck-based. There's a few games where I just won outright because the person I was playing just couldn't get high enough numbers, and it's pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
But it's over so quick, and it's just a light dice chucker, so nobody gets upset, and it's a lot of fun. I played a game, Revolution.
Oh, I love that game. That's the Steve Jackson?
Yeah. I didn't love it. I was...
Really?
I felt like normally I'm good at sort of deducing what other people are going to do, but in this case, I'm sort of picking out, and I'm like, well, I think this guy's going to go for that, and this guy's going to go for that, and she's going to do this, but it's like, okay, so I can't win anything that I really need.
Yeah, I did find that frustrating. I was playing with a number of our friends, one of whom had played it before. I had trouble deducing what some people could do, were going to do, but other people I had no trouble at all.
Yeah. And that could have just been because it was my first game. But I just felt like when you get turns and you're like, oh, I didn't accomplish anything at all.
Right. Yeah, there was definitely that. All right. So
What else did I play? I played Epic Card Game, which is essentially...
Oh, that one's brand new.
Yeah, brand new. I was playing that Kickstarter version.
Uh-huh.
It's Hearthstone.
Hearthstone,
the card game.
See, yeah. I've heard it equivocated to Magic the Gathering, so I guess the...
Well, I think Hearthstone's like a sort of a different version to Magic. Essentially, you're going after a mage with X amount of hit points. I think it's 30. And
okay.
It's weird, though, because things are either free or cost 1 gold coin. And every turn, you get 1 gold coin to spend.
Oh.
Which is a little more Hearthstone-like, in which case you have, like, your mana just recharges.
Huh.
So you've got X amount each turn. I enjoyed it. What else did I play? I get a quick little game called Naya, N-I-Y-A. It's about a Japanese garden, and you're just trying to get 4 in a row, horizontally, vertically, diagonally, or a 4 square.
Oh, I think I've seen this.
Yeah, it played in like 5 minutes. I played Josh, actually, at the store, and he beat me. It took me a couple turns to realize things I could have set up. Not that I would have won anyway, but, and then I played, last episode I said I'd never played Seven Wonders. I've now played Seven Wonders. Highly recommend it.
I knew it was only a matter of time before you'd lock that one down.
Yeah, I had Antoine Bauza is, one of my favorites. Also the creator of Ghost Stories.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I always forget he did that one.
Mm-hmm. Hanabi is another one he did. I think he did the Little
Hanabi.
Prince game.
Oh, yeah,
so those
that's
are the
right.
new
that's
ones.
Another
and
one.
Then I did... Yeah.
Wow, that guy's just everywhere.
And now it gets me back on topic, because the other 3 games I played were all horror games.
All right, now we're talking.
The first one was Zombies, with 3
okay,
exclamation
I haven't played that
points.
One.
Terrible.
Oh, that foolishness.
That game. I ended up winning. I made it to the helipad first. It was the first time I'd played since I think it came out in 2006. I had a lot of fun with it.
It seems goofy on the surface.
It's pretty goofy. It's pretty goofy.
It really is. But, you know, that said, sometimes goofy is fun. And it does remind me, in that you're trying to get to a helipad, it does remind me a little bit of Left 4 Dead, the video game.
Yeah, well, there's actually two ways to win. You can either get to the helipad or be the first to kill 21 zombies.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The thing about that game is, yeah, well, you can just keep dying.
Right.
And then you start over in the middle and you lose some of your zombies. But I must have died 20 times in that game that I won. It was ridiculous. Another horror game that I played is the first RPG I've ever run. And I ran a game of Dread.
So I've heard of Dread, but I don't know anything about it. Like, it's one of those things that exists.
I know Will Wheaton played it on Tabletop, and unfortunately they used one of the scenarios that's in the book, because they give three. I kind of wish they created their own. But it's an RPG, and instead of rolling dice, say you wanted to... somebody's been wounded and you want to bandage them up. Mm-hmm. Or a monster's attacking and you want to try and pull out a gun and shoot it. Whatever it could be. Instead of rolling dice to see if you achieve, you pull a block from the Jenga tower. And I can give you multiple pull, or the game master can say, you know, it's going to take you one pull to do that, or it's going to take you two or three. And you can have like a teamwork on something, and each person can do a pull. There's all sorts of... you have fun with it. You make it work.
Yeah.
But if at any time the Jenga tower falls on your pull, or you are responsible for knocking it over, even if you weren't pulling, you're out of the game.
Oh, you're just, like, straight dead?
You're just gone. So if on the first thing of the game, like, you try to open a window, I'm like, make a pull for it, because it's kind of jammed. It could... you, and you're really bad at Jenga, you knock the tower over... the glass shatters and impales you in the face.
Ugh.
Ouch, game over, you're dead.
That's terrible. But yeah, also, at the same time, like, I love the suspense factor.
Yeah, well, the way I played it, luckily this didn't happen to me. Mm-hmm. But if somebody had died that early, I wouldn't have made them leave the game. I would have rebuilt the tower, probably giving them some kind of injury or something they had to overcome. But I don't want anybody out of the game because they sneezed during the first 10 minutes.
Right, of course not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the rule book says straight up that, you know, it's about having fun, and if any of the rules get in the way of that, just ignore them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, it's great. It was tons of fun. Really had to think on my feet, because having never run anything like that before, afterwards, Joff and Corey were telling me rule number one of GMing is the characters or the players are always gonna throw your story out the window.
Oh, absolutely. And Joff especially, like, he lives to throw stories out the window. I remember the first time I did any RPG with him, he and I, our character synergies were so strong that we were way off base, causing the GM to have to completely rewrite literally on the fly.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was having to do. But everybody was... it was realistic, and it was, like, nobody broke the game. The things they were doing made sense, which I think helped me, you know, frame the story around that in a way that made sense.
Absolutely.
So, but it was awesome. Really suspenseful. People were just, I mean, their hearts are pounding because you're on a Jenga tower, and take the difficulty of Jenga and add your character elimination to it, and people had a great time. Really intense. And if anybody can get a copy of the book, which I've got, you can also find the PDF online. Definitely worth a play.
Well, that's an interesting point, the suspense factor. And I feel like that's something that the horror genre does really, really well.
Well, it's kind of the point, right?
Exactly. And I mean, if you're gonna make a horror game, I feel like you are obliged to instill some measure of sheer terror into your players. And a game that does that really, really well that I played only the other day was Arkham Horror.
Ah, you got to play Arkham Horror,
I did, and we actually won, too. But we were so... like, the terror element was strong enough that we were actually... in order to, you know, keep the game moving and keep ourselves laughing, we were actually getting into our characters. I was playing as the private eye, and I kept talking like this, you know, trying to get into character. And, you know, we had the richest bum in the world. Someone was playing the hobo, and he went from $1 to having more money than anybody else in the game. And so he was role-playing that. He kept talking about, you know, well, if I have to, I'll sacrifice my dog. You know, and so we were all really getting into character. And I think that was a result of the fact that we were legitimately freaked out by these Lovecraftian beings that were coming after us.
It's great in a horror game when you can get that situation where you're kind of dreading pulling the next card or rolling the dice, or you have to go somewhere and complete something, and you really genuinely don't want to do it because you don't think it's going to go well.
Right. Do you have a good example of that at all?
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch. Speaking of Arkham Horror, I have A Touch of Evil.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great example.
Which we call the monster game. And a lot of people... I've never played Arkham Horror, but you've played both, and you might be able to attest to this, but I've heard it's Arkham Horror Light.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like Arkham Horror is interesting in that once you learn the rules and the order of play, it's really, really easy to manage. And anybody can just sort of run the game.
Right.
Whereas I feel like in A Touch of Evil, and also its sister product, Last Night on Earth.
The zombie one, yep.
Yep, the games don't really run themselves the way that Arkham Horror does.
Touch of Evil, especially, you need... Like, I always just play the villain, I think, because we always play it the cooperative way. There's a competitive and a cooperative way. We always play co-op. And I think you're supposed to, like, put control of the villain so that each person gets to bring out the tokens or do whatever every turn. But I usually just run it. But that's the example you asked for. It's like... You know, not early game so much, but later in the game when more monsters are out and things are going bad and you're running out of time and suddenly it's the bad guy's turn again. And it's just like every time you get through that hero cycle and it comes to be the villain's turn and you're rolling the dice and you're seeing it's going to happen and you are just dreading the outcome because it's not going to be good for you.
Oh, it's never good.
The game's already challenging. Oh. It's just, and that's the kind of thing I think a good horror game can build.
Absolutely. But by the same token, it doesn't need to have that in order to be a good horror game. We played, you and I played a game, a brand new game from Evil Hat Studios called Don't Turn Your Back.
Yes, and that is the last of the games that I played.
Yeah, and that game, I had a really good time. I played it 4 times now. And I've had a really, really solid, good time every single time I played it, except the time that I was playing with 2 players. It is not strong.
What is it? It's 2 to 4, right?
Or it is 2 to 4.
2 to 4?
Yeah. Okay. And I legitimately believe it should be 3 to 4. And here's why.
Oh, really? 2 just doesn't work?
2, there's not a very strong interactive component to it until you get up to 4 players. Because then you've got enough variance in the decks that... Everybody's playing different characters, or different nightmares, they're called. Basically, the theme of the game is you've garnered favor with a city of nightmares, and you're trying to escape by waking up. Right. And in order to do that, you need to cash in on these favors that these nightmares owe you. For example, there's one that's ostensibly Slender Man. There's the Wax King. There are Lady in Hating. They're all, you know, plays on the vampire and zombie
scary
genre.
Scary kids.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a whole high school mechanic that you were particularly successful with. I believe it was either you or Jesse. It wasn't me.
I think I came in last in the game we played. Well, we played a game that only had 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I still felt that it was... there was a lot of interaction. I mean, because... I was basing decisions based on what I thought other people were going to do, because you can block people out of being able to do things. And sometimes I would do that offensively, or sometimes I would play a card before I wanted to in a spot because I wouldn't be able to later. There's also direct attacks.
Right. I mean, it's a worker placement game in that you have these nightmares that are ostensibly serving a purpose for you, but it's also a deck building game.
Yeah, I think it's the first deck building worker placement game that I've played.
Yeah, I've never seen a game that actually hybridizes those two concepts, and this one did a really good
job.
Maybe
a little in City of Remnants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
City
other
of Remnants
thing...
does it a little bit, but not in quite... In City of Remnants, it's not so much worker placement as area control.
Yeah, and Don't Turn Your Back is definitely, I mean, area control is strongly present as well. But the thing that got me most about Don't Turn Your Back, it teaches really easily.
Yeah, it does.
Which is something that, certainly we were talking about it last month, but when you're trying to, especially when you're at a party, because, Halloween parties are decidedly a thing these days, this time of year. Well, this time of year.
I don't have a lot of Halloween parties outside of October.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I mean, I've been to one that was in the spring.
Oh, I would love a spring Halloween party. Maybe that's something we should do next year.
I'm down.
I mean, I've heard 6 months to Christmas and 6 months to Valentine's Day stuff, but yeah. Halloween's my favorite holiday.
Exactly. We can do Halloween in,
organize
April.
Midway to Halloween bash. I think we just did it right now.
I think we did. Adjacent Hex, official. Anyway, it teaches really well. So if you've got a group of people willing to sit down and play a game, you can teach them in a matter of seconds. You just literally go through the game zones and explain how the cards interact with the game zones. And people can pick it up and play it. And I had a really good reaction from a group of people the other night when I was able to teach them that game in 5 minutes. And it sets up by unfolding a board.
I think you taught me in 5 minutes.
Whereas a game like Z-Pocalypse, which is another awesome zombie game. I loved it when I learned it the first time. For the life of me the other day, I could not figure out the rules. Granted, it had been 8 months since I played it. I played it back in February.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I felt like I was letting myself down. I felt like I was letting the other players down because I'm so amped about this game, but I couldn't for the life of me figure out the rules. And they were just so confusing in even the updated rule book. I couldn't get my head around
it. Huh?
It just didn't do it.
That's a shame.
It really is. And I, because like I said, I love this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping that, if I can sit down and watch a video or reconnect with the developers who were the ones who taught it to me in the first place, then maybe I can pick up a little bit more and actually successfully run a game next time.
Well, you said, I think there's a how to play, right?
There is. There's a couple of them on the YouTubes.
Yeah. I mean, give those a watch. I've done that before I taught games. It's nice when you can do it straight from the rule book, though. It's really something that should be doable.
Exactly. I think that's...
I know, we mentioned a couple of zombie games, though. We mentioned Last Night on Earth, which I own, Dead of Winter, which we both own, right?
Yes.
You own Dead of Winter, yeah.
I do.
iZombie, or Z-Pac. iZombie's a comic book.
Yep. This is not a bad comic book, but yeah, no, Z-Pac.
Well, I bring it up because, a lot of people talk about the zombie theme being overdone.
I've heard that a lot
right now, and I don't get that because I understand that there's a lot of zombie games, but the thing for me is I don't play a lot of zombie games. I played Last Night on Earth. Dead of Winter is barely a zombie game. I don't even really consider that. I played Zombies for the first time in 9 years, but it's like I don't have a problem with the saturation. Because there's other things out there, so if I don't want a zombie game, it's not like I'm limited to just zombie games. And I don't play so many zombie games that I get sick of it. I have my one or two that I play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I mean, I have Dead of Winter, but like you said, it's not strictly a zombie game. And as a matter of fact, I'm not even particularly inclined to bust it out around Halloween. I prefer to bust it out around Christmas time, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I prefer it in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's something to do with the title.
Well, I suppose. I mean, New Hampshire winters, as anybody who lives here will tell you, are particularly nightmarish, or can be.
That was a heavy, heavy sigh.
Well, we know it's coming.
I just don't feel like it. I love the autumn, and I'm glad it's here, but it got so warm so late in the year that I'm not quite ready to go back to the cold.
Right.
I need another 2 months of warmth.
Yeah. And it's still, like, I'm not ready to hunker down with the longer board games yet. I'm still in, King's Forge marrying Mr. Darcy territory.
That's November territory, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't even usually crack the big ones out till November.
Exactly. But,
you know that I'm looking at Mansions of Madness on my shelf. Speaking of Arkham Horror, speaking of overplayed themes, because those are both Cthulhu games. Because you mentioned,
yeah, Lovecraftian,
and that's it's the same idea. It's that sure, there's a million Cthulhu / Lovecraft games on the market, but I own Mansions of Madness. That's my one Cthulhu game. And then I think A Touch of Evil has an unknown horror, which is very Lovecraft inspired.
Absolutely.
But it's the same thing. I'm not Cthulhu'd out because I only play one Cthulhu game.
Yeah, and I feel like the big thing to think about when you're looking at the width and breadth of the horror games genre is what aspects of horror appeal to you? And if you're like us and you just kind of like everything, pick one that really fits with each theme. I've picked, you know, I've got Z-Pocalypse, which is my zombie game. I've got Arkham Horror, which is my Lovecraft game. I've got, you know, Don't Turn Your Back, which is sort of my nightmare, you know, trapped in your own mind sort of game. Psychological, I guess, horror. And I'm not inclined to buy more of any
another
of those
one.
Genres.
Yeah. Yeah. The before I got another zombie game, I probably would get another Lovecraft game. I would like to try Eldritch Horror, which is sort of in between Mansions of Madness, which is kind of a dungeon crawl almost, versus Arkham Horror, which is this huge epic game.
Yeah, I remember.
I think I've heard Eldritch sort of falls in the middle there.
I remember when I first got Arkham Horror, you cautioned me, hey, if you start buying Arkham Horror, you're going to need to buy a whole new shelf. And
yeah.
You're not wrong. My Arkham Horror has kind of eaten my bottom shelf of my board game shelf. So
yeah, well, you went and got a bunch of the expansions right out of the gate, too.
I did, and it's because I was able to obtain them for next to nothing. It was kind of just a no-brainer at that point.
Yeah. Gotta love no-brainers.
I don't know
what that means. Gotta love no-brainers, kid. Hey, you kids.
You know, horror and Halloween games, much like the film genre, will always hold a special place in my heart, and I think Doug would agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. I have been a horror fan since I was watching Poltergeist when I was 3 years old, and I'm, you know, watching The Babadook just the other day.
Yeah.
It never ends. I love it.
And of course, I'm already looking for, you know, screenings of Halloween or The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari or any of the classics that we can
attend. Yeah, you and I, actually, last year, a local theater played Halloween on the big screen. And we were able to see it on the big screen, and that was the first time. I've seen that movie probably 30 times, and it's the first time I got to see it on the big screen. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Loved it.
So, anyway, if you want to check out some of the older episodes of the podcast and some of our other work, head on over to anotherletdown.com. Huge, huge thanks to our editor, Jody Wagner. And at time of recording, it is the day after her birthday, so happy birthday, Jody.
Happy birthday, Jody.
We really couldn't do this without her.
Thank you, Jody.
She is fantastic. If you have any feedback for us, you can reach us on Twitter. My name is at DENONCZD, and Doug is at ITSOKTOLAFF. If you have something a little bit longer to say to us, more than 140 characters, feel free to shoot us an email at adjacenthex@anotherletdown.com. We also will be starting to stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/anotherletdown. We're going to start with Sentinels of the Multiverse, the digital game, and we'll see where we go from there. Anyway, from all of us here at Adjacent Hex, happy gaming, and we'll talk to you next month. Happy Halloween, folks. Da, 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 da.